Welcome to episode 112 of the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. Last week in roundtable number 2, I was joined by Landon Michelson, Holly Sisson and Phil Peck for a great conversation, and you know, it was great fun. Thanks to all of those who've commented and sort of gave feedback on the second roundtable. And what I'm going to do today, actually, we actually continued to talk for almost 30 minutes or so after the planned conversations that we had and that I published last week. So today it's just like a bonus track. I'm going to give you sort of a chance to listen to what we talked about after the main recording last week. And it's, you know, there's a lot of it might not be so interesting, but I'm sure that there are parts of it that are going to be of interest to some of you, especially if you're interested in the technology and the gear side of the latest sort of bodies and things. So just a quick bonus track, really. So I hope you enjoy this.
All right, Martin. I didn't realize you had ordered a 1DS.
Yeah. It's wow. I've been saving for the third generation.
The Mark III, right?
Yeah. I've been waiting for the third generation because things are changing so fast that.
Yeah.
I mean, the price hasn't changed from the first version, and of course, there's going to be a generation 4, and I'm going to be like.
Well, I know, but
it's going to drive me crazy. But
you have seen the new Nikon the D3, yes.
I have, yeah. I've got. What? The thing is that my most expensive Canon lens costs more than a 1DS. So
oh, I know. I know. I would never switch. But I'm just, you know, I'm thinking Canon's got to get its game on, because I've seen the sample images from the 3D. I tell you, if I was a Nikon shooter, I would have my order in for the 3D, because it just looks spectacular. The noise, the high ISO.
Yeah, if you want
handling
that,
of it is just if you want that, incredible.
It's definitely there. I mean, it's something for everyone to think on. And I think that there are, for me though, I mean, the 1D Mark III is very definitely the D3 has killed that. If you are a Nikon user, people are going to be really happy. But I think that you know, if for a high end like sports or documentary, you know, journalism type camera, I think that the D3 has killed the 1D Mark III to an extent. But the 1DS is different. It's more gathered for sort of like a slightly slower paced work, and the noise is still going to be low.
Right.
Though it doesn't have such a high ISO, right? I mean,
compare. I don't think it can compare to the D3. Have you seen the sample images from the D3?
Under what? With like the really high ISOs, do you mean?
Yeah, like the 6400. I mean, it's. Have you seen them, Landon?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I'm seriously investigating one. If I do more weddings, I'm seriously investigating
exactly.
One for 2008.
Exactly. I mean, for the kind of photography that I do, wow, it was just. Very impressive. So I'll look forward to when you get the. I'm sure you'll speak about it on your podcast and give us a review.
I think the thing is with that is that I'm the 1DS. It doesn't even have high ISO. I think the highest it goes is 32, and that's the expanded one. So they're really different. They're covering different parts of the market, but definitely. I mean, there are things I like that. What was it? The Horizon thing, excuse me. You know, it's got that.
Oh, I could use that a lot. I could use that every day.
Right. I mean,
It has so many little things. It's got the two card slots. Does the 1DS have that?
It does. Two cards? But it doesn't. Okay. The annoying thing is
one of them's compact flash, and one of them's SD.
Right. That's the annoying thing. I won't be running that by an SD. I mean, having two compact flash card slots would be amazing.
Yeah.
You can put JPEGs on one and RAWs on the other, or you can do field backups. You can do almost anything you want.
Right. Wow. Right.
So I've got to figure that Canon's scrambling. I would have to think that they're.
Well,
yeah. I mean, I think that Nikon's up the bar. In a huge way.
I don't know. I don't think
isn't. I think competition. Oh, competition's great, though.
Yeah, it is.
Bring it on.
It's going to spur on Canon, and I'm curious to see what the replacement for the 5D is going to bring. And
yeah, I think that it's definitely up the bar on the 1DS, but I still think that, you know, Canon have been spurring Nikon on for years as well. Anyway, so it's a bit. I think it works both ways. That's exactly what Landon just said.
Yeah, that's the beauty of competition.
Right, it's this competition that's sort of bringing it all sort of. The thing is, it's keeping them on their toes. Both companies on their toes. Mm-hmm. Plus, mm-hmm. all of the great features that they develop for the high end stuff gets trickled down into the lower end models. So,
right.
You know, I mean, the 40D is an amazing piece of kit for the price.
It's right.
So I think that, you know, everyone's benefiting from this sort of this race, but it definitely keeps us on our toes as well, because we end up sort of really sort of regretting buying something. A lot of people, I mean, I paid a ridiculous amount of money for a D30 years ago. And I was thinking, I it was my own fault. I didn't really look into it. But I bought the D30 about a month before they announced the D60. And it was exactly the same price with twice the pixels. And the D30 never really had enough pixels. So I think that people generally, you know, you can't wait for anything, but with a little bit of patience.
If you need it.
Right.
And it's funny, on the Flickr group that I'm on of the, you know, starting a child photography business and running a child photography business. And there's so many Nikon shooters that switch to Canon to get the 5D and have the full frame. And now they're all switching back to Nikon.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's going to be a glut of 5Ds on the market.
Yeah.
Once the what is it, the D300, is that the lower end one, Landon?
Correct.
Yeah, and the D3 once they're available.
Mm.
Anyway,
because a lot of people generally, once they have enough or a certain amount of investment in the lenses, I don't think people switch that easily.
I've met photographers that have switched manufacturers entirely just for one feature.
Really?
Really?
Yep. Yeah, they totally have dropped their entire bag of kit, everything that they had, just for one feature, for one workflow, for one client that they constantly are shooting, and it means that their workflow means enough to them to jump ship.
Wow.
And then they jump back. So
The thing I've heard too about Nikon and Canon, and I've never shot with Nikon, so I don't know. But everybody says all the Nikon shooters that switch to Canon to have the 5D full frame say that it was very hard for them to learn the Canon, that everything's backwards, all the controls are backwards to the way they are in the Nikon. I think I'm a Canon shooter, and I will always be a Canon shooter because I'm so used to shooting with a Canon, and I've got my lenses. So
that's very similar to the Mac and Windows thing. I don't find the Mac very intuitive at all, but people that use the Mac don't find Windows very intuitive.
Well,
yeah, I find Canon intrinsically backwards to the way I work, and I've shot both. I just can't wrap my brain around it. The lens goes the wrong way, the mirrors go the wrong way.
It turns the wrong the opposite way, right?
It's backwards, yeah. Anyway, it's interesting. I'll be. When do you expect to get the 1DS, Martin?
I'm fourth on the list in a shop here in Tokyo. I was watching out for it coming, and I called them the day it was announced, within hours of it being announced, and three people got there before me. So
I hope there's no issues like they had with the 1D.
Well, the thing is, like with the 1D, there is always worry about buying things in the first batch, but I think that, you know, Canon wouldn't take that amount of money from you and then leave you in the lurch. So
no, well, they are correcting. You know, they are correcting the problem with the 1D.
Right. And they already say that's fixed in the 1DS as well, but there could be other stuff. But even like with my 5D, I bought one of the first batch of the 5D, and the shutter curtain was jumping. So especially in cold conditions.
So what does that mean? What does that mean?
What I was getting was a line of overexposure at the top of all of my shots, because it was the shutter was dropping down, closing. but then it was jumping up again slightly and allowing more light to hit the sensor before, you know, before the shot actually finished. So, actually had to get a, they had to change the shutter unit, which is, you know, that, I mean, that's not great, but the camera was fine after that. So never.
And how long have you had your 5D?
Since it was released, so just over 2 years now.
So, all right. Are you going to keep it as a backup? Or?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's still a great camera. And I was going to keep my 20D as a second camera when I did that. But what I found was that if you don't use equipment, it's like a lot of things. It starts to slowly break down. And I took it out, took the 20D out, and I sort of kept playing around with it. And I noticed that the inbuilt flash didn't jump up anymore, and I wondered what the hell was going off. Never really beaten the camera around or anything, but after a little bit of messing around with it, it jumped up like once. It stopped, didn't jump up maybe once out of three times. So I thought, well, maybe it's time to sell the camera before, you know, while I've still got a chance of it jumping up. So not very honest of me, but I was in the shop. The guy was looking at it, and it jumped up first time. So I got a good price for the body, but... If I'd have waited any longer, I was thinking that I probably wouldn't be able to resell it. So.
Right. I had a horrible time selling my 30D.
Really?
I mean, the person who bought it got a great deal. I sold my old 28-105 lens, which is, you know, I got the 24-70 f2.8 and the 70-200. So I didn't need the, it was a 3.5 to 4.5, I think. So kind of a slow lens. And they got it. They did very well because it is a great camera. Mm. But I also found that once I got used to the full frame on the 5D, if I do get the replacement for the 5D or whatever else I may get, I would keep the 5D as a backup. And I think what I would do is, Len, did you ever do this? You go to if you're doing a client shoot, have two cameras, like, I guess, similar to what a wedding photographer would do. You've got a, you know, I would have like the 24-70 on one body and the 70-200 on another, or something similar.
Of course, I have to be a lot more radical than that. I use three.
You use three? You're going to have to tell me how you strap all of those on you and manage to maneuver around without, you know, banging the cameras together and what have you.
Sometimes belt I find system, baby.
Well, you know what? I find the belt system's great, but it's in the wintertime, it's awkward with the winter, you know, warmer coats, and it, you know, it gets to be, I don't know. Tomorrow I'm going to take my backpack. I have a backpack. I picked up a LowPro, and I haven't even used the backpack that I got, it's the same. It goes with the belt pack that you and I have talked about, Landon. Think Tank.
Yep.
I haven't even used the backpack of that, but I guess I will if the weather's rainy or whatever, because it has a rain cover. But
all three around for the entire shoot. When something's critical happening, and I keep two on me and one within reach, you know, if I need it, then I have two lenses mounted, and I can jump from the 70s. The 200 2.8 to a wider lens, and then I usually keep like the 10 millimeter on the third body just to capture some really wide shot, because the one comment I've gotten from other photographers and the clients is they say, well, you really seem to get around. Well, what I do is I do a 360 of the event, and then I shoot with three lenses, and then when they see the results, it's like, wow. You
know, right, like, well, exactly,
because there's all these different angles.
Yeah, just switching lenses. You know, you wish you could just do it like that, because all of a sudden you're in a situation you wish you had, you know, the longer lens on, and you wish you had the wider lens on, and it, you know, it takes a few minutes to switch lenses.
Mm. So yeah, shooting with another body really helps.
Yeah, so I think that's what I would do.
It helps with this long exposure workflow too, because while one camera is set up to do a 6-minute exposure and you're sitting there going, tweedledee, what do I do now? You grab a second body and explore the next shoot.
Right. Yeah, you know, you're going to need to get two tripods, Lynn, and then you can just...
I have two tripods. I have three, but...
Okay.
Yeah, one's a grounder pod. It's only 6 inches in diameter, and it stands about an inch and a half off the ground. So I use that one to stick in the water. And I have the camera lens like an inch off the water surface.
Wow.
With that thing.
Then you really have to be aware of the water rising and falling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
End up with the whole thing in there.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah.
And Martin, I use the think that. Sorry, go ahead, Landon.
I was just going to say, I used the D200 for that because of all the water seal, you know, weather seals. So if it, right. if it did get splashed or the water came up quickly or some weird thing, then it's pretty safe. But
right. That's what I was going to ask you, Martin. I guess you'll enjoy the weather sealing on the 1DS.
That's the main drive for me behind getting this camera. It's mm-hmm. been a pain. I do a lot of work in the rain, the snow, the cold, and
yes.
It's just been a pain sort of mollycoddling the 5D in those sort of conditions.
Well, I look forward to hearing your experience with it and how it holds up against the elements. And
I'm sure
the whole review.
Yeah, it'll be it'll definitely.
But you don't shoot at very high ISO then, Martin, typically, because you're doing
right.
You do most landscape and.
Yeah, 32's always been plenty for me. I rarely use it. I would do if it was less noisy, and I'm assuming because of the larger photo sites on the 1DS over the Mark II, then I'm thinking that it probably will be better. But I'll give it a try, and if it's usable, then I'll go higher.
So sorry, why I know do you
on
think
the, it? And then I was going to say I know on the D3 the 6400 has become the new 400 ISO.
Wow. I know, it's incredible. I mean, the D3 just blows me away. But Martin, why do you think that the noise will be better?
I'm thinking, apparently the photos. I think it's the photo sites or the lenses that go over the. You know, the light goes down a small channel in the sensor, and in the 1DS Mark III, the lens that channels that light down into the sensor is larger. There's less gap between it than. The one on the 1DS Mark II, and that was a little bit more noisy even at higher you know say at like 1600 or so hopefully it'll result in less noise, but I've really not looked into that yet. It's one of those things that I use every so often, but generally most of my work's at 100 down to 400
because you're on a tripod. I'm enjoying the fact that I don't have to use a tripod for the kind of photography that I'm doing the most of now.
Yeah.
So high, good performance at high ISO is very important to me, and that's why the D3 is wow. I mean, I'm so impressed by the results that they're getting and the detail. I mean, it's unbelievable the detail they get at the 6400 the eyelash. I mean, you can see it's just unbelievable. And I think, am I not right, Landon, that it's a full frame sensor, but how many megapixels is the D3?
It's only 12.
Right. And that's the so difference. What, and what how many chosen is the 1DS? Yeah, because that's supposed
21.
To be. Yeah.
Well, the 1D is only 10, right? So that's another area where it really kicks the 1D Mark III. You know, if pixels is your game, then the 1DS is the camera still. But it definitely has killed the 1D Mark III to, you know, it's just kicked its ass in real time.
Yeah, there is right. rumors that Nikon's releasing a 20 plus megapixel camera next year.
Yeah, it'll be there. They'll be doing it. and
like you and I've.
Sorry?
You and I've talked, Martin, the critical point's not going to be how many megapixels you have, it's how much power your lens now.
Right. So that was the other thing with the 1DS, because it once we get over, if they do like a 30 megapixel camera in a few years time, then that's a whole definitely a whole lens range change, and it's just not practical. So
no.
I think that
no, you know, I mean at some point they have to say, you know, I mean how many megapixels do you need? It's we know it's not all about megapixels.
Right. And well, the thing is that the lens can't resolve it anyway. You know, if you try to resolve that with standard lenses, it's not even going to happen at 21. But if you've got really good quality L lenses, then you'll be okay with most of them. But a lot of the lenses that would have been really good on film years ago, they're already going out. I mean, the 5D shows a lot of flaws in some of the substandard lenses, and so having another. Another 10 megapixels on top of that is going to just really wipe the floor with old lenses.
Well, it's L lenses and prime lenses.
Right.
You know, I, that was one thing I thought would be a good topic was, you know, knowing when you first get your DSLR, what lenses to get. And, I mean, I got an 85 1.8, so I've still got that lens, but the zoom that I got, you know, ended up not being, you know, my choice to keep. And I think I would have been far better off getting a couple of prime lenses. Mm. And then deciding what kind of photography I wanted to do from there. I mean, I think the 100 millimeter macro is a fabulous lens. You've got the ability to go close, and it's also a great portrait lens. In fact, that shot that I had of the father and the daughter was with the 100 millimeter macro.
Yeah.
Yeah, my 105 VR still has the best bokeh of any lens I have in my kit.
Mm. Well, you know what I love about it is you can really get in on the face, and especially with children. I mean, to get the detail in the eyelashes and the eyes, and like, I mean, it's just fabulous, and you just cannot focus that close. How close can you focus with the 85 1.2?
It's not that close. It's yeah. I think it's around, let me see, it's about 80 centimeters or so. It's quite far away.
80 centimeters, so what is that in inches? Well, I should know because I'm in Canada, but
about 26 inches, maybe almost three feet. I'm not sure exactly, but
right.
So you can
basically do a head and shoulders. Is that right?
You can fill the screen with someone's head and shoulders, but it's not a lot more.
You can put a 12 or 25 millimeter extension tube on it and change that distance, but it changes the bokeh too. So
It works pretty well with a 25 millimeter. I tried the 25 millimeter extension tube, and it works pretty well with that. You get, I think, around 10 centimeters, 4 inches or so of a focusable range, but it's maybe a little bit more. But it's usable. But I've not actually used it for any, you know, I've not only taken any photos with it yet. I've just done a few tests.
Right. Well, that'd be interesting to see.
Yeah.
I think that would be my next lens if I were, the next time I'm in the market for lenses, that 85 1.2.
Well, it's an amazing piece of glass. I mean, you can shoot at 1.2 and it's,
right.
And if you've got the shutter speed and you know, if you get rid of any camera shake, then, and you get the focusing not really spot on, then it's even sharp at 1.2. At 1.4, it just blows you away. You know, one thing. Sorry, Landon.
I was going to say, that's not an L lens. It's an LS lens. It's light sucker.
Yeah.
It is. It's amazing to look through. But one thing that you'd want to check out, Holly, is that the autofocus on it is a lot slower than I was hoping for. It doesn't snap in like, you know, but I think it's because the focus is so important that, you know, it's relatively slow. It sort of, it just trundles along there and, okay, now I'm in focus, you know, and it's like,
I find that with the macro lens as well. It finds a hard time finding the focus point.
Right. And I mean, that's the thing with macro lenses as well. It's important to get it really spot on, right?
Right. Right,
but you're really not focusing. You're changing, you know, magnification. So in reality, you're really not focusing.
What do you mean? You
know, with a macro lens, it doesn't focus the same. You know, you're changing when you're actually focusing with a macro lens. You're changing magnification, so it's not quite the same thing.
Yeah, only if you're using a. Like the one to five times 65 millimeter does that, but I'm not sure what you mean about, say, with a 100.
My 105 macro and my 105 macro that I had before it, they both focused a little slower. Mm. I mean, even though the 105 VR is pretty snappy comparatively speaking, a macro by its own, you know, workings is changing magnification when it focuses, not truly focusing, you know, a lens element to focus.
I think I know what you mean. You know, you can definitely see things change there. And at its closest focusing point, you're at life size, right? So I guess I see what you mean.
Yeah, when you can focus from 3 inches to infinity, you're moving a lot of glass around, you know, inside there to get there. Normal lenses don't do that.
Yeah.
Right. That's the one thing that I find annoying with the 5D, and maybe, Martin, you don't it doesn't come to play as much with the kind of photography you do. I'd hate where the focus sensor points are on the 5D. They're too close to the center. They're not on the thirds. And I find it's not too bad when I'm doing it vertical. Is it the I can't remember which orientation is in a better position, but that's frustrating. And I would get the replacement just for that reason if they had better focus points. And frankly, I'm even toying with the 1DS. Mm. If business is going well enough with its, how many focus points? 45 or something?
Yeah. I know what you mean. I think what they did with the 5D was they took the focus points from the 20D or the 30D.
Yeah, the 30D. Right. And because it's the same positioning, but because it's a full frame, you've got it's too close. It's too close to the center. I know the 40D, they've corrected at least the fact that they have crosshair sensor points for each point, rather than just horizontal or vertical. So at least that's an improvement, and that's sure to be in the replacement for the 5D.
Yeah.
But I don't know if they would have the placement of the focus points would be.
I think that they've improved. Even got like an X. They've got diagonal lines on the center of the 40D, I heard. So it's,
is that right?
Yeah, so I don't know. I guess that's better because it's not just looking for diagonal or for horizontal or vertical lines.
Vertical, it's looking, for everything.
Yeah.
Well, I guess they had to do
something. Looks for contrast anyway, I can get it.
Yeah.
I guess they had to make that center point sweeter than the other ones. Mm. What is it like with the 1DS? How do the focus point works? Do they have the one center point that's optimum compared to the other ones, or?
I'd have to take a look at the specs, but I think that I think it was something like 19 of them are cross sensors, and then the rest are like normal sort of horizontal or vertical, and they're they augment the cross sensors. But around half of them are cross, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
Yeah. And they're spread out evenly around the zone that all of those 45. But I loaned a 1DS Mark II last December when I went, because I'd sold my 20D. I loaned or rented a 1DS Mark II last December, and I ended up turning off most of the focus points out of the 45 or whatever, because I found that it just wasn't handling the contrast. I was shooting mainly white with black-tailed red crown cranes. And the background was a very sort of mottled, high contrast, back bunch of trees. And it was just focusing on the background all of the time, despite there being like a 2 meter tall crane or whatever in the foreground. And I ended up turning off the sensors most of the time. So that's one thing that I am hoping is better in the 1D S Mark III. But then, it's been years since the 2 was developed, and there's been a lot of R&D gone into the whole system since then. So.
Right, so that's interesting. You could turn some of them off.
Oh yeah, you can. Well, not so much turn it off. You just select the one that you want to use, right? You can do that your 5D. I mean, once you select one, the others don't play a part in it.
Right, of course.
So that's what I'm saying. Yeah,
I see.
Yeah, the Nikon has another feature too. They not only have the focus points out towards the edge, and different cross sensors, and the center focus is more sensitive than the others, and all that. But you can do a large group area where you can group the sensors together, and you can set that as a preset in one of your memory banks if you use it a lot, so that those focus points are grouped together the way you want them to be, and it helps. And then there's other group dynamic focusing modes you can set to, which I've found to work better with certain lenses and situations. So I just set those as a preset, and then you can flip your thumb to whichever one you want. So having good focusing points is kind of critical for some work.
Yes, I think that is a one. Isn't that a function in the high end Canon?
Yeah,
Martin?
Yeah, they have that as well. You can select in batches and presets and things. So that's something that I'm looking forward to as well.
Wow, I don't know. It's sounding pretty sweet. I have to see what the replacement is like for the 5D and see what the reviews are on the 1DS.
Well,
including yours, Martin.
It's highly likely that the 5D's replacement will be waterproof, or splash proof.
Really?
As well, I don't know where I heard this. I may have even dreamt it, but I heard that it's possible that there's going to be some dust and waterproofing, splash proofing on the on the next version of the 5D as well. So that would be good. But I'm going to buy the 1DS Mark III before that, so it doesn't hurt me in any way.
No. Yeah. Well, that would be very interesting. I haven't heard that rumor.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see what happens. It's probably not coming out until the... we lost Landon again.
Yeah.
Until sometime next year or so.
Yeah. Okay, so that's it. Like I said, just a quick bonus track there of the conversation from our that followed after the second roundtable that I published last week. And I would like to just say again a quick thank you to Landon, Holly and Phil for a great roundtable and a chance to speak to you guys. It was really cool, and I know from the feedback that the listeners have enjoyed it as well. So thanks again, guys. And I'm going to... That's it for this week. I'm not going to sort of go into anything else. We've got a 30-minute bonus here. So it's a bonus for me too, because it saves me from preparing something else this week. But I'm going to sign off. I remember again that we are still taking bookings for the Hokkaido workshop next January. So if you're interested in that, go along to the mbpworkshops.com website and take a look at the details. So all that really remains to be said there is, thank you very much for listening and have a great week, whatever you do. Bye-bye.
PhotoCastNetwork.com, your photography resource in the podosphere. PhotoCastNetwork.com.